Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the February 7, 2021 session, focusing on Mark chapter 1, verses 29 through 39, rest time. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
Not that I've had a lot of experience with this lately, but what would you say to the question, what is your preferred way to rest? Or if you'd rather, what's your ideal day off?
Okay, I can actually do this. So when I have a day off and it's all to myself, I like to do, what I like to do is I call it putzing around the house. So I'll wake up slow, I'll get some coffee, I might watch a news show, or I might do a little reading, and then I might do something that cleans the house a little bit, go straighten up the kitchen or something like that, and then I'll go sit down again and just chill. And I really love, if I have a chance to rest, I want a chunk of time so I can just putz and do whatever I want to do that is in front of me to do, totally unplanned, no goals for the day, but usually by the end of it, I feel refreshed. And I have done some of those things around my place and my house that I've been putting off because I've been so busy. And that also refreshes me. So honestly, my favorite way to rest is to putz around my house. That's what I do. So that's me.
Well, Nikki, you do you.
That's what I like to do. Just no plan. There are lots of other ways I rest, but if that is the way that I rest probably the most.
So for me, nothing beats a good nap.
Amen.
Absolutely. I'll meet people and they say, "Oh, I can't nap," and I'm like, "What? Who hurt you? You know,
what? Who hurt you?
Were you dropped as a child?"
That's right. You can't beat a good nap. But ideal day off has to, and I try to start out my Saturdays this way, but. I like to wake up early naturally, and so starting the day with a good cup of coffee in the Washington Post is about as good a day as as you can get. And that's because I can usually have two cups and a good part of the paper done before anybody else gets up, which is nice, because after then you don't get time to read the paper after that.
Well, for me, I'm kind of like y'all. I like to putz around the house. Especially during the semesters, I don't get a whole day. I mean, because of this teaching and pastoring and stuff. But my favorite way to escape is about once a week, sometimes twice a week. Daniel, I can find an hour, maybe two, if it's really nice, and I just turn everything off and I go and I get in the bed and I nap. Now, but for me, when I nap, I turn on loud rock and roll.
Of course you do.
Absolutely.
I put on Led Zeppelin. I put on Rush, music from my childhood and youth, and I go off and I kind of be in and out of a dream state and sleep state, but I'm back in a time period when I'm not in control of everything, and life was good, and I was just a young kid listening to rock and roll. But I crank it up loud, so I don't hear phones. I don't hear anything. But yeah, man, it's nice.
I put on nature sounds.
I go to sleep at night with nature sounds. Oh, I nap with loud rock and roll.
I love it. I love it.
Well, it's hard for me. I'm kind of ADHD, and I fidget, and I'm busy, and so getting me to sit still is an interesting thing. But really, it's more for me. Resting is more about not having a to-do list hanging over my head.
Yeah, yeah.
If I feel like I've got a responsibility that I should be preparing for or doing something with, it's really hard to shut down. Not because I can't not want to do that. You know, I can go, "Yeah, I don't want to do that," but
right.
But it's hanging there, and so for me, those days that happen where I've somehow been able to, you know, and really the Christmas holidays to New Year, that's kind of that for me, because usually I'm able to get things wrapped up for 1 year, put it away, and everybody else is away.
Right.
And so there's nothing getting added. And so that lack of responsibility, that to-do list that's not hanging there, I can really rest when that's in place. So, but Well, however you find that you best rest, I hope we all find a place to do that. We need that. Even God rested, right? And I think we have a text today that's going to lead us into some more thinking around this question, too. So, Daniel, could you help us get started in that?
Yeah, well, I'll try. And I'm not sure about you and your own situation, but here's a dichotomy I'm noticing these days. For some of us, the pandemic has given us some time to slow down, spend some more time with family and the like. For some, working from home has given them some more leisure time. For others, it seems, during this pandemic, they are as busy as they have ever been, if not more so. Certainly that's true for doctors, nurses, social workers, hospital custodial staff and food workers, ministers, teachers, and many, many more. It seems like the busyness right now is not equally distributed. Before March of this year, many of us were already overworked, overstressed, overproducing, and frankly, over it. And for a lot of people, that's only gotten worse. Ironically, a few years ago, we did not think that this would be the case. In fact, in 1967, I read, in a testimony before a Senate subcommittee, a researcher predicted that due to our technological advances, quote, by the year 2000, people could be working just 22 hours a week for 27 weeks a year and could retire at age 38. Yeah. No. Didn't happen. In some ways, technology has made our lives more hectic. Now, I'm not against technology. I mean, writing and editing sermons is much faster on a computer than a legal pad. And I can update my Facebook profile in a matter of seconds. Hundreds of family and friends can see my new pictures, what I've eaten for lunch, and my friends' asinine comments show up in real time. The computer in my cell phone is more powerful than the computer that sat on my desk in college. But having email on that cell phone has allowed me to respond to messages at 11 p.m. or 6 a.m. or on a day off. Technology has benefited us as a society in many ways. But you can't tell me it's allowed us to slow down and enjoy more leisure time. In our scripture lesson for today, Mark tells us about a very hectic day in the life of Jesus. He's apparently pretty new in his ministry, and he finds himself in the town of Capernaum. Jesus moves around town like a mother schlepping her children from school to piano lessons, stopping by home just in time to stuff a grilled cheese sandwich in their mouths before soccer practice, then bath, homework, bedtime, and somehow digging deep to find the energy to do a load of laundry. Jesus has spent time worshiping and teaching in the synagogue. He heals a man with an unclean spirit. We talked about that last week. Then he goes to Peter's house, maybe just to rest for a moment. And wouldn't you know it, someone there needs his attention. Peter's mother-in-law has a fever, and everyone there is distraught. I can relate. That sounds a lot like the Glaze household. When mama gets sick, the house falls apart. Jesus is at the end of his rope. He knows he needs to refuel, so the next morning he goes off to pray. I don't think Jesus went off to pray because he didn't have anything to do. He went off to pray because he had so much to do. Once I heard a story about an American businessman who goes on a corporate sales trip to Asia. That morning after his plane arrives, he goes to the outdoor market near his hotel and begins to browse around. There he finds a potter who is sculpting these beautiful clay bowls. They weren't just works of art. They weren't just bowls, they were works of art. He sculpts them, then paints them, then glazes them. And the businessman inquired about the price of one of the bowls. He does that quick currency conversion in his mind and figured these are about $4 each. So he gets an idea. He figures he can buy a large number of these bowls and sell them back home for a tremendous profit. So he says to the bowl maker, I see you're selling these bowls for about $4 each. How much would they be if I bought 100 of them? The artisan replied, In that case, sir, they would be $7 each. The businessman is surprised. No, 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 you don't understand. If I buy more, the price should drop. The artisan replied, no, sir, you don't understand. The price goes up because if I have to make 100 bowls, I will need to take more time to rest so that I may complete them. Jesus didn't go off to pray because he didn't have anything to do. He went off to pray and rest because he had so much to do. We all have much to do. Whether we find ourselves with more leisure time or less, the same is true for all of us, and we must not forget it. We all have important things to do. Care for the earth, loving our families, looking after the sick, working for justice, caring for the poor. To be faithful to what God has called us to, we must be intentional about prayer and rest. So I tell you what, y'all go ahead and finish up this podcast. I think I'm going to take me a nap. Jesus told me to. And I may blast some rock music while I'm doing it.
Daniel, you could probably use some rest. And no, I say it funny, but I mean, seriously, pastoring during a pandemic and in this day and age, I know pastors I talk to are exhausted. The multiple demands, the way that even simple things are harder now, the additional tasks that are there that weren't there before. I mean, I just want to say thank you to you and all the pastors that are out there who are likely exhausted and really could use some rest. I hope you find it.
Mm. Well, thank you. I have realized that whether I have time for it or not, we must take that. Mm-hmm. The alternative is hitting the wall, and then we're no good to anyone.
Yeah,
and it's interesting because not only is Sabbath keeping, I mean, it's not a suggestion by God; it's a commandment,
right?
But it's the only one that we not only daily, hourly disregard, but. But we are proud that we disregard it.
Mm.
I mean, do you see anybody else posting on social media, hey, I am not honoring my commitments to my wife these days, you know? Mm-hmm. But we will talk about, I had to do this, and I had to do this, and I did this, and I did this. And we almost boast about how busy we are and how we utterly disregard this one commandment of God. We don't do that with the others, but this one, it's like a badge of honor.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have made it a theological thing, this whole Protestant work ethic that we have. Because why? Because the devil's hands, what is it? Idle hands are the devil's workshop. If you're not busy, right, we worship busyness. We worship production. So keeping the Sabbath is easy to kind of post off because we've got things to do. God wants us to be busy. And so we have idolized busyness and theologicalized, if that a word, the holiness of it. And so you're right. We just totally ignore and celebrate the fact that we don't keep the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about the scientist that said we would retire at 38 because of technology, mm-hmm. didn't take into account our desire for productivity, right? Like that didn't, yes, if we continued to work at the pace we did before technology and produce the amount that we did before all of the technology, then yes, that might have been true. But what happened was all of a sudden we could do things faster, and so which meant we could do more things in the amount of time that we have. And we are so hell-bent on, can I say that on this?
Sure.
on producing more and achieving more and then, like you said, bragging about it. I love your phrase, he stopped to pray and rest because he had so much to do. And when I am able to achieve that in my own life, like I, like you all, struggle with busyness. When I am able to stop and rest, I find that the work I do is more efficient and effective. It doesn't take as long because when I'm tired and worn out, it takes me a lot longer to do the things that I have to do. And I'm not sure that that's a reason, but I do think it's a benefit of the call to rest.
I have never been one that would be able to successfully, what do they call it, pull an all-nighter.
Right.
Even if there is a big project, my brain will work better if I go to bed.
Yes.
And get up and give it my best shot in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people just need to stay up and do it all night, and they can do that. But I, what I am able to do is better, I think. And I'm not trying to put a value judgment or talk about this in terms of production. But I think I think more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably able to love more compassionately.
Sure, yeah.
and when I'm caring for my own need, mm-hmm. to just give it a break.
You know, right before we started the podcast, David kind of mumbled a little bit because he had so many windows open. And of course, he's got a very high-powered Mac, and he can do those type things. You know, and my old 12-year-old Mac still clogs up sometimes when I have just a few windows open and a few things running, and it'll just get so frustrating because it starts to freeze and it tries to do too much and it slows down and it's not as productive, and eventually you just gotta hit the button and turn it off and restart it, and then it wants to know if it wants to reopen everything again. So no. But I've got a sign, a quote from Anne Lamott that I keep on my wall next to my computer. And sometimes my wife can come in and she'll see me. She'll see me with a headache, and y'all can't see me while I'm doing this, but I'm rubbing my head because I can't see the screen straight and I can't think what I'm doing right. Am I working on this class or that class or this church thing or that church thing? And this person's texting me, and all this is going on. And it's kind of like David with all of his windows up. Again, he's got a high-powered Mac. You can do that. But I've got this quote from Anne Lamott. My wife will come in, and sometimes she could see it in my face that I'm frozen with all this stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this quote from Anne Lamott says, and she'll come and she'll point to it, and she'll say, almost everything will work again if you unplug it for a few minutes, including you. And, you know, and she'll kind of smile, and it's kind of like, yeah, all right.
Okay.
And so as I'm rebooting the computer, I'll go and I'll take a nap, or I'll go for a walk or something, or I'll just tell people I'll be back with you tomorrow. And I go sit down and watch TV with my wife or something. And then, yeah, the next day I've got that much to do, but I've only got one or two things open at the moment, and I can think very clearly, and I am refreshed. And I think, you know, that's a good way to think about what Jesus did.
You know,
because everybody's demanding stuff.
Right, right. And, you know, I think a lot of times on this podcast, when we talk about following the teachings of Torah or following God's way or following the teachings of Jesus, we talk about how the whole intent is for us to live an abundant life, to live a life that is more whole, more healthy, more wholesome. And I think that's the part we're talking about here, right? Like, we're all a little bit better when we rest. I think on the other side of that, the other piece that this rest gets at is that it's choosing to rest, choosing to take Sabbath, is choosing humility. Because a lot of times our unwillingness to put things down is, I'm the only one who can do this.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's all going to fall apart if I don't get this done. But when we put it down and we say, okay, it'll go for a while without me, we recognize that we are not nearly as powerful as we think that we are, that we are not nearly as needed as we think that we are or hope that we are. And, you know, and we say tongue in cheek, even God rested, but y'all, even God rested. Mm-hmm. Even God stopped. And so who are we to think that the world will not go on turning if we stop for a little while, because even God rested.
Good for you for saying that, Nikki, because I, man, you hit me square between the eyes. I don't know that I've thought about it in that way, but I think you're exactly right. This connection between violating Sabbath or not resting and sort of this is a very egotistical thing to do. You know, the old joke about pastors is the pastor's two greatest fears are that the church can't survive without them and that the church can't.
Mm. Right.
Yes. And so we almost, well, if I'm not busy, then they won't, they'll think they don't need me.
Right.
No, that's not what they're thinking at all.
Right.
They're probably not thinking about me at all, you know? I mean, it's just this inflated sense of self that if I stop, it falls apart. It's silly. It's silly.
Mm. Well, and to honor that struggle that pastors have, there are people in church who will use a pastor's rest time as as a way to, like, you know, turn the knife a little bit, right? Sure. There are people like that, but it makes me think about last week's podcast. Those are the voices of evil spirits. Mm-hmm. When someone challenges and makes us think that we shouldn't have the time to rest, you know, now there's a difference between resting and laziness, you know, that, you know, there's that too. But if they're giving you grief about resting, those are not the voices of God.
Interesting, because a pastor friend of mine went in for a in view of a call type interview with the church. You know, he's going to come preach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everybody can come ask questions and all that. And someone in the church asked this potential pastor's wife, how do you feel about sacrificing your husband so that he can give his time and energy to the church and sacrificing family time? And she was highly offended at that. And the pastor, potential pastor, was kind of like, well, I don't plan to sacrifice my family. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that idea is there. And interestingly enough, in that church, the previous pastor had to leave because he took on the Superman role that was being given to him, and he gave himself to everybody and neglected his family to the point that he had a fling with somebody in the church. Mm. And you know, that's a sickness that's in so many of our churches, of what we expect our pastors and ministerial staff to always be there for us at any given moment.
You know, okay, so Nikki hit me squarely between the eyes as church member. Let me punch back about academia.
Wait a minute.
I mean, serious. Okay, let's. David and Nikki, y'all are both in higher education administration. If a faculty member taking sabbatical, if faculty members who have to take sabbatical or anybody. What do we ask? What's your sabbatical research project? What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Imagine if the person said, yeah, I'm going to sleep. I'm going to knit. What we would say, no, that's not it. You have to have a project. What is your sabbatical project? You know, what are you going to produce during that time? Because that's what we expect. And so I guess since we're all guilty of this, you know, we who should know better seem to violate this. Now, y'all may push back and say, you know, it's sabbatical and academia is sort of different, but the root word is the same, Shabbat.
Right. Mm. Right.
I don't know. Push back if you want to, but that's I don't know. I guess that just goes to show this is all over the place.
Oh, it is.
It is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I started Mississippi. Y'all hear me talk about Mississippi State all the time because I teach here, but I started here in college and then I transferred to a small Baptist school, fairly conservative, but it was on the liberal conservative side of things 30 years ago, Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. And I minored in psychology, majored in religion, philosophy, minored in psychology. And one of my favorite psychology professors, I took several of his classes. He had this theme that kept coming back up, because no matter what psychology class you're taking, some of the same material comes up, right? And he loved to talk about the must. You know, I must do this, I must do this, I must do this. And that this is a mental issue, and we have to untangle this and get past the, no, you mustn't. Like y'all said, the church will survive without you.
Well, we do have an enormously hard time as part of our culture, shutting down, not feeling responsible, not feeling like we need to do more. And that great mystic Thomas Merton, of course, has some words for us. So I'd like to close by reading just a bit of what he wrote as he was thinking about rest. And I'm going to give you the punchline at the beginning. He says at the end, he says, "The very act of resting is the hardest and most courageous act he can perform." So let me start up before that. He says, "We do not live merely to do something, no matter what. Activity is just one of the normal expressions of life, and the life it expresses is all the more perfect when it sustains itself with an ordered economy of action. This order demands a wise alternation of activity and rest. We do not live more fully merely by doing more, seeing more, tasting more, and experiencing more than we ever have before. On the contrary, some of us need to discover that we will not begin to live more fully until we have the courage to do and see and taste and experience much less than usual. There are times when, in order to keep ourselves in existence at all, we simply have to sit back for a while and do nothing. And for a man who has let himself be drawn completely out of himself by his activity, nothing is more difficult than to sit still and rest, doing nothing at all. The very act of resting is the hardest and most courageous act he can perform." May we each work to do that hardest and most courageous act, because I suspect, if you're like me, we all need it. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.